Welcome to New World Notes, hosted by Kenneth Doust. This week, part one of a nice documentary film on the international so-called beauty industry, or how to get rich by making everybody in the world hate their bodies. I hope you'll stay tuned. New World Notes has looked at the beauty business before, with programs featuring critics Jean Kilburn and Rebecca Anshel Song. We'll hear from Kilburn again today, among others. Today we'll have part one of a recent documentary film on the beauty business, male and female. It's from 2015. Written, directed, and produced by Elena Rossini. That's a new name to me, but she does very good work. The film is titled The Illusionists. One neat thing about The Illusionists is that it is international in scope. We'll hear from experts, and ordinary people too, in Boston, Paris, Milan, Beirut, Mumbai, and Tokyo. Plus a bunch of TV ads and video clips from around the world. The problems are global, not unique to the United States. The regional variations in beauty standards are interesting, though. The film doesn't use the term cultural imperialism, but that's part of the situation, too. The social status of the colonial people rises the more they look like their imperial colonizers. These foreign standards of beauty linger even after the empire packs up and goes home, as in India today. Or maybe the empire hasn't exactly packed up and gone home. Today's corporate ruling elite looks very much like last century's imperial elite. In any case, the beauty standards of the global rulers include pale skin, light hair, long legs, and slimness. Mixing with cultural imperialism are local beauty standards, which can be almost as hard for anyone to meet. So, in Japan, pale skin has long been highly desirable in women, to which are now added such Western features as round eyes, long legs, and skinniness. At least the Japanese still find straight black hair attractive. Not a peroxide blonde can be seen among all the Japanese girls and women the movie shows. Hey, Clairol, here's your next big opportunity to make some bucks. Here's a real stunning bit of information from the film. What country has the highest per capita rate of plastic surgery? No, it's not the United States. The answer is Lebanon. Here's another shocker, at least to a child of the 60s like me. Some studies show a surprisingly large number of young American men find female pubic hair disgusting. I don't know how well you can see me. I am shaking my head, half in sorrow, half in disbelief. Of course, more men are shaving off all of their body hair, too. That's a growing fad. Good news for Gillette, and whoever makes the male version of Brazilian bikini wax. As Melville's Bartleby the Scrivener famously said, I would prefer not to. But enough of me. On to our first installment of The Illusionists. Once again, the director is Elena Rossini. Lest you forget her name, in 1 minute, the film's first music will remind you. But the film starts with a brief lecture from the 1960s.
Well, there they are. Our new electronic media, or our new gadgets. You push a button, and the world's yours. You know how they talk about the world getting smaller? Well, it's thanks to these that it is. Everywhere is now our own neighborhood. But not only is the world getting smaller, it's becoming more available and more familiar to our minds and to our emotions. The world is now a global village. A global village.
We see the selling of the westernized image as the badge of modernity in India, in Singapore, in China, in Japan, where the notion of how you join globalized culture is the taking of a Western body.
There is one of those trends happening where we are trying to embody this westernized, modernized image because that's where power comes from. Power in society, power in the Western world, power in your job, power with your own beauty.
A black woman in Paris. Skin whitening, we call it scraping here, has become practically banal.
If you walk around the streets of Lebanon, I think you'd realize that most people look the same, specifically people from a certain social class that have the money to have this many surgeries.
Tokyo. Japanese women are under incredible pressure to have an ideal body, just like top models and manga characters. The problem is that the desire to look this way doesn't come from the women themselves. It's often imposed by society and the mass media.
I can remember when I was a high school student that body image was just not a concern. Nobody in those days worried about whether they had a six-pack of abdominal muscles or faithfully went to the gym 6 days a week. It just was not an issue when I was a teenager.
It's often seemed to me that a person who feels happy and secure isn't going to be a very good consumer because that person isn't going to be looking for products to shore up the self-image or to feel better about oneself.
Part 1. Insecurity Sells. Jean Kilbourne.
Of course, there's nothing wrong with people wanting to look attractive and sexy. Just about everyone wants that. So the problem isn't the desire to be desired or the desire to be attractive and sexy. It's the ways in which this is corrupted and exploited by the commercial culture.
A recent study by Psychological Science has found that people spend more if they're feeling sad and self-focused, even when the sad feelings are temporary.
The ideal consumer is someone who's constantly dissatisfied, constantly needs more and more products in order to feel better. Actually, the ideal consumer is an addict, someone who has to have a product, and the product will never really meet the need, so the craving goes on and on and on and never ends.
Obsession. Obsession.
And for those consumers who already feel rather happy and secure, the industry has devised endless creative opportunities to feel otherwise. The best example is cellulite. It's an invented disease. Throughout history, cellulite was always considered perfectly normal body fat. The word cellulite actually appears for the first time in Vogue magazine in 1968 in a three-page article about this obnoxious condition that women were not aware of. And soon, a cottage industry of anti-cellulite creams is born. In 1987, Vogue warns American women that working in an office can damage their skin. Air particles found in an office can lead to what Vogue calls occupational dermatitis. In 2006, Vogue warns its readers about so-called aging feet.
One thing that I think most people don't realize is the extraordinary amount of power that advertisers have in terms of the content of the media. That people like to think that there's kind of a wall between editorial content and advertising, but in fact, there really isn't, and there's less and less of such a wall than ever before.
Our cameras are going to show you a non-surgical facelift live during our newscast.
A huge amount of the content that we get on the news is actually video news reports that are sponsored and paid for by corporations without the viewer being aware of it.
We're actually going to see four different non-invasive treatments during this hour. It's actually started. Kathy is our patient. Dermatologist Dr. Dale Isaacson is performing the procedure. The first one is thermage, which for the very first time could be done on the eyelids. Now, about 15 minutes before Dr. Isaacson started, Kathy had a Valium. Kathy, how are you feeling right now?
I feel absolutely fine.
Dieters have a new ally in the battle to lose weight.
Yeah, it's called Ally, the first FDA-approved over-the-counter weight loss drug, and it hits store shelves today.
From NBC News, this is a special age-defying edition of Today.
People sometimes say to me, well, women must want this because it's women who support these industries and women buy all these products, and so this must be something that advertisers are just giving people what they want. And the truth is, I think, that women are deeply conditioned from birth to feel that what's most important about us is how we look, that our lovability, our desirability depends upon our appearance, our bodies. And if you believe that, and it's very difficult not to, of course you're going to be looking for products, and you're going to be looking for fashion, and you're going to be looking for things that will deliver the goods, that will make you more beautiful in the society sense of the word.
Harrison Pope, professor of psychiatry, Harvard Medical School.
The advertising industry has already saturated the female half of the population and has already done its best to convince women that they should be dissatisfied with themselves and should purchase a plethora of new products to make themselves more beautiful. And so now it seems that in the last 30 or 40 years, the advertising industry has now turned its sights on the other half of the population, hoping to find new markets. And if one can convince men that they are not muscular enough or lean enough or that their physiques are not adequate, you can perhaps generate yet another market of insecure individuals who will purchase various products in the hope of attaining greater beauty.
Part 2. The official body. Now, in our world news, can you guess which country has the most plastic surgery procedures per capita? Well, it's neither Brazil nor the United States. It's Lebanon. One in three women has had plastic surgery procedures. There are even special bank loans for plastic surgery.
We have the most plastic surgeries than anywhere else in the world. And the interesting thing is that we're always competing with Brazil. So one year Lebanon's number one, one year is Brazil number one. In my theory, it's only because there's 12 million Lebanese living in Brazil that sort of, you know, are constantly competing about who has more plastic surgery operations. And there's tourism packages for people from other Arab countries to come to Lebanon and have plastic surgery procedures here. It's automatically been built into the economy, become an industry in itself.
Dr. Tony Nasser, cosmetic surgeon in Lebanon.
Every day I receive people, let's say from Kuwait, from Saudi Arabia, from France, from USA, from Canada. This year we have a big demand in the butt. I think the plastic surgery now, it entered in the culture of the country. And nowadays they talk about it freely. In the past, it was more closed and secret. Nowadays, the plastic surgery is the talk of the town, and it's a talk of every day. When two women meet each other, the first talk is the talk about beauty, about plastic surgery.
Sadly enough, actually, I grew up in a culture where people would be like, oh, you have a beautiful face, haram, haram your body, you should do something about your body. Some doctors would actually ask you, who would you like to look like? Everyone looks exactly the same.
Meher Meitzar, a Lebanese bank executive.
We used to receive 30 to 35 calls a day for the total of our products, so people asking about personal loans, housing loans, car loans, and the other products. And after launching plastic surgery campaign, we were receiving between 300 and 400 calls a day. In Lebanon, appearance is important to socialize. And in Lebanon, we really socialize a lot. People, they feel that it is important for their improvement in their career and in their life, to build up friends, to become more successful. That's why people are attaching more and more importance to appearance and to plastic surgery.
If you open any newspaper with classifieds where they're searching for jobs and they're searching for women, most of our jobs say must be beautiful. If they're good, they say must be presentable, but most of them say must be beautiful, must be good looking, for jobs like accounting.
Psychotherapist Susie Orbach.
One of the tragedies that's happening at the moment is that we're losing bodies as fast as we're losing languages. Just as English has become the lingua franca of the world, so the white, blondified, small-nosed, perp-breast, long-legged body is coming to stand in for the great variety of human bodies that there are.
Black and white.
Mumbai, India's biggest city and the country's commercial and entertainment capital. Strolling through its streets, it's hard to miss the ubiquitous messages advertising skin whitening products. White beauty, fair and lovely, perfect white. The market for fairness creams has had an explosive growth since the 1970s. But the desire to have light skin has deeper roots.
Most Indians still have internalized racism, where the Western body image is definitely more superior. Because remember, India is an ex-colony of the British, where we've always had this fascination for the white man or the white woman and how she looks. So there is, I think, one of those trends happening where we are trying to embody this westernized, modernized image, because that's where power comes from. I mean, when you say fair, it's all relative. North Indian women are lighter skinned than South Indian women for most part. But everybody is trying to aim at the light skin. So the North Indian woman who's already got a lighter skin is aiming at being as light as the British colonial woman or the American woman that she sees on TV or a white model. It's unattainable. That's when you go out and seek products that are extremely dangerous, because there's no way that you can sort of change the color of your skin. That's what you're born with. Why don't we just accept that brown is beautiful or black is beautiful?
The market for skin whitening creams is so lucrative that there are about 50 new products introduced in the Asia-Pacific region every year.
Go sleeveless on him with fairer, whiter underarms.
Pharmaceutical company Midas Care has recently caused an uproar with its skin-whitening Intimate Wash, promising to make women's genitals whiter. The possibilities are endless for making Indian women insecure about their skin tone. And nowadays, there is a new target.
So you have, for instance, you know, cream that was targeting women for the longest time called Fair and Lovely. There's a counterpart for the men now. It's called Fair and Handsome, and that's Emami that launched it in 2005. With exactly the same sort of reasoning is that, all right, you have it all. You're male, so vis-a-vis the women, you already have the power, but vis-a-vis the white man, you're probably still not as well off. So if you want to go that notch up into the power hierarchy, you know, being fair might help. And so whether it's for a job or whether it's for matchmaking or whether it's for appearing as more westernized, modernized, sometimes what the West calls civilized, it helps to be whiter.
We can also find skin whitening messages in the most unexpected places.
Paris. Paola Audrey Ndengwe, the editor of the magazine Fashion Black. The use of skin whitening creams, unfortunately, is really common in Africa. I mention Africa because the vast majority who use these creams here come from the diaspora and have been brought up in a culture where skin whitening, we call it scraping, is so common it's practically banal. So here in France, I think it is unfortunately a common practice, even though very few people talk about it. It's totally taboo. Skin whitening is so common here that the authorities had to intervene. They banned the sales of products that contain hydroquinone, one of the key ingredients, which can be very dangerous. Despite the ban, all you have to do is go to the neighborhood L'Aiguillette d'Or, and you can still buy these creams. I think that advertising and the mass media have played a role in this. Everywhere you see black women who are not too black, so they can be accepted by mainstream media. The most prominent women in entertainment today are all fair-skinned and have a huge influence, even on black women who live abroad, like here in Europe.
Une influence considérable même pour les femmes noires issues d'autres pays et qui sont notamment en France.
L'Oréal, the world's biggest cosmetics company, has run into trouble with an ad for hair color featuring the singer Beyoncé, who is virtually unrecognizable. L'Oréal has vehemently denied altering Beyoncé's complexion. Yet what's interesting is to notice the many faces of Beyoncé in the company's ads over the years.
Several magazine ads featuring Beyoncé are shown. In the most recent ad, Beyoncé's skin is much lighter in color than in the earlier ads.
The idealization of a fair skin tone is not always a black and white issue. Porcelain white skin has been valued in many parts of Asia for centuries. It's seen as synonymous with youth, elegance, and refinement, a trend that beauty companies have been quick to cash in on. Japan breaks all records when it comes to consumption of skin care products. Women use on average 7 to 10 products a day. Afraid of the sun's effect on skin aging, many women use umbrellas to shield themselves from the sun's rays. Having a porcelain white skin, free of blemishes and beauty spots, is the ultimate beauty ideal in Japan.
In Japan, we have a proverb that says, a white complexion hides all flaws. I mean that even if you're not attractive, having white skin makes you beautiful. Traditionally, the Japanese have always valued white skin.
Mm-hmm.
The irony is that while pushing white skin in the East, these same companies tell you to avoid it at all cost in the West. They sell skin whitening creams in half of the world and self-tanning lotions in the other. Clearly, they don't care what color your skin is, as long as you are insecure about it. The ideal is often impossible to achieve, but the illusion is that this beauty can be bought if only people keep consuming.
And here we must pause the first installment of The Illusionists, written and directed by Elena Rossini. Yes, thank you. I won't forget. We'll hear the rest of the film in the next two installments of New World Notes. Shakespeare has a nice poem on impossible standards of female beauty. Impossible standards celebrated by starry-eyed poets and such. It's sonnet number 130. My mistress' eyes are nothing like the sun. Coral is far more red than her lips red. If snow be white, why then her breasts are dun. If hair be wires, black wires grow on her head. I have seen roses damasked red and white, but no such roses see I in her cheeks. And in some perfumes there is more delight than in the breath that from my mistress reeks. I love to hear her speak, yet well I know that music hath a far more pleasing sound. I grant I never saw a goddess go. My mistress, when she walks, treads on the ground. And yet, by heaven, I think my love as rare as any she belie with false compare. If you miss any weekly installment of our show, you can find it on our website, which is newworldnotes.blogspot.com. From Darkest Connecticut, this is Kenneth Doust, thanking you for listening, reminding you that you're not crazy, the system is, advising illegitimate non-carborundum, and hoping you'll tune in again next week. Till then.